Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is our regular early morning period for the news direct from Germany, England, and Washington. Our reporter in the Reich will be heard following the report from Berlin. Go ahead, Berlin.
Hello, NBC. This is Charles Lanius in Berlin. The Germans claim that 33 British planes were shot down by their fighter machines and anti-aircraft guns during yesterday and last night. Only two German planes are reported missing. The Royal Air Force bombed 9 places, including Hanover, in northwestern and central Germany last night. And it's said that an attempt to reach Berlin failed. According to the High Command today, the British used incendiary bombs, starting fires in some places, but these, according to the report, were rapidly extinguished. The Germans deny that any damage was caused to military objectives, but say that a number of civilians were killed and wounded. In these excursions, 8 British bombers were shot down by German night fighters, while ground defenses accounted for another 4 planes. Earlier yesterday, the Germans say that the RAF tried to penetrate into German-occupied territory on the Channel coast, but the attack was broken up by German fighters and anti-aircraft fire. 6 British planes were downed in dogfights, and 3 others destroyed from the ground, according to the German figures. There were civilian casualties and damages to private houses, but no military damages reported. German naval units got another English machine off the Norwegian coast yesterday, according to the High Command. 11 British machines are said to have been destroyed on the ground and several others damaged when German pilots attacked British airports in England. The Germans also bombed harbors in the east coast of England and laid mines and others. While all this air activity was going on, and British warships attempted to night bombardment on the Channel coast, but the Germans say they were driven off by the heavy fire of their shore batteries. In the Mediterranean area, German Stukas again attacked military objectives in Malta and on ports on the Cyrenaican coast. But the High Command communique doesn't tell what damage was done. German reconnaissance planes are said to have seen 2 sunken merchant ships in the Suez Canal, which are said to have been hit in previous German attacks. German flying fortresses are now ranked by the Berlin press alongside German U-boats as a striking force at sea. The newspapers are full of praise for these long-distance bombers, which flew far beyond the British blockade zone on Sunday to attack a convoy more than 300 miles west of Portugal. It's claimed here that since August 1st, one group of German bombers alone sunk or damaged 85 enemy ships with an estimated total of 555,675 tons. In connection with this, the Germans state that the North Atlantic and the vital shipping lanes west of Ireland are already controlled by their air force, and now even British convoys sailing in mid-Atlantic are unsafe. Attention here is still focused on events in France, but the general picture is just as cloudy as ever. Well-informed Wilhelmstrasse sources said this morning that Marshal Pétain is still head of the Vichy government. But it's not all clear just how the division of power in the new cabinet is going to shape up. So it would appear that the Germans are just as much at sea as the rest of us on French developments. When asked about German troop movements in Bulgaria, these same sources pointed out that the Bulgarians had already denied that German troops are in Bulgaria. And a tart comment on the recall of the British legation of Bucharest was heard in the Wilhelmstrasse today. It was stated that General Antonescu has created order in Romania, putting down acts of sabotage, intrigue, espionage, and treason, so there's no reason why the instigators and protectors of these activities should remain in the country. In Norway, 3 Norwegians have been sentenced to death for spy activities. A 4th man got 5 years in prison on the same charge, and 2 others were acquitted. The 6 Norwegians were accused of operating an unlicensed shortwave radio transmitter to send out information about the German army of occupation there. A German prosecutor told the officers in charge of the court-martial that Bergen was damaged and civilians killed by air attacks resulting from reports wireless by these men. The trial lasted 5 days. In a speech to Germans in Luxembourg, the German district leader there, Gustav Simon, throws some light on what is expected of the principality. Herr Simon claimed that there are already 50,000 members of the National Socialist Party in Luxembourg and that more of the population will join. The district leader said that, of course, Luxembourgers couldn't be expected to become good Nazis at once. They must have some time to get accustomed to the new order. He went on to say that 75% of the Luxembourg youth organizations have been disbanded, and the rest will be dissolved in a few days. Then the compulsory labor service is to be introduced. French names must disappear, and everything will be done to make the country German. However, declared Simon, no pressure will be exercised on the people to get them to return to the Reich. They must decide to do this by themselves. This is Charles Lanius in Berlin. I now return you to NBC in New York.
That's the report from Berlin today. From the Associated Press, this dispatch from Rome. British planes bombed Sicily and southern Italy last night, causing some damage at an unidentified town in Apulia and near Avellina, where 4 persons were killed and several injured, according to the report from the Italian High Command today. Our next newscast from the war zone on this, the 531st day of conflict, comes from our staff reporter in England. Go ahead, London.
This is London, Ed Deuce talking. The general feeling that the wrath of all the Germanic gods may be unleashed in the near future at 1, 2, or more points in Europe, intensified in Britain today with the announcement of the break in diplomatic relations with Romania. Mr. Churchill's cabinet put off the fateful day as long as possible, presumably at the personal request of Sir Reginald Hoare, the British minister in Bucharest. No one here had any illusions about the ultimate motives of Nazi penetration into Romania. But so long as the Germans had not pressed for Sir Reginald's exit, there was no use in beating a retreat until it could be done with dignity. The denial of the official Bulgarian telegraph agency of Mr. Churchill's statement that German troops and airmen had penetrated Bulgarian territory is, of course, welcomed, but it is not taken seriously in official quarters here. The denial may have been dictated by German sources. It may be taken as certain that Mr. Churchill would not have been overhasty in writing another country off the prospective Allied list without valid reasons. It is denied here, on the other hand, that the British government ever advised Bulgaria against a mutual assistance arrangement with Soviet Russia. The advice of the British government in this matter was not asked, and it is doubtful whether an offer of large-scale assistance was ever made by Russia. The British General Staff, which is probably keener in vision than any this country has ever had, is confronted with a knotty problem. The war on many fronts that Hitler, with his army of 225 divisions, is capable of launching anywhere simultaneously on land, compels Britain to choose which strategic points to hold and which to abandon temporarily. The choice is necessary because of the limited material. What there is in the way of guns and tanks is, like the airplanes, of first-class quality, but it is not enough. The situation is, therefore, dominated by a single factor, speed. Speed in the production of war materials at home and in North America, speed in ending the North African campaign, and speed in sending aid to Greece and Turkey. The resistance Balkan countries will put up against Hitler is directly dependent on the amount of assistance they see in the offing. They obviously prefer no assistance to too little. Speed is also essential because weather prophets predict an early spring in England and on the continent. Spring may come to the Balkans as much as a month earlier than normal. Bombers of the RAF made heavy attacks on industrial targets in northwest Germany last night. The main attack was directed against Hanover. This city has now been bombed 27 times. Other targets attacked include objectives in German-occupied territory. 4 British aircraft did not return from these operations. During daylight hours yesterday, the bomber command raided targets in northern Germany and also docks and shipping at Boulogne, Dunkirk, and Calais. 2 German planes were shot down during this attack, and 3 British fighters are missing. There was slight activity over Britain last night. It was mainly directed against the east and southeast of England, but very little damage was done, and there were very few casualties. London's warning lasted less than an hour. RAF night fighters claim that 2 German bombers were probably destroyed last night over the east coast. It is confirmed in Vichy this morning that General Franco and Signor Suner will pass through France today. It is believed that they will confer with Mussolini and perhaps Hitler as well in Italy and meet Marshal Petain on the return journey. The Marshal left this morning for the Riviera. For the seventh successive week, the Admiralty's figures of British merchant shipping losses are below the average. Losses for the week ending February 2nd were 11 British ships, representing 40,400 tons. Three Allied ships and one neutral ship, bringing the total to some 57,000 tons. On the home front, the Ministry of Supply has issued an appeal for private 4- and 5-passenger motor cars for a, quote, special army requirement, unquote. The cars must be less than 3 years old, and the ministry will pay the list price minus 10% per annum depreciation. I return you now to the NBC in New York.
And now the early morning news at home, direct from our newsroom in Washington.
Good morning. One thing the death of former Russian General Walter Krivitsky may bring about here in Washington almost today is either more money or a greater appreciation or both for the much-kicked-about Dyes Committee. Krivitsky had been a star and startling witness before the Dyes Committee. Some of the report is based, the conclusions therein are upon Krivitsky's testimony. The resolution providing that Dyes group with $150,000 for 15 more months of life is about to be considered by the House, and there's still underground opposition somewhere. Some of this is no more or less than just plain American politics, Texas politics, for Martin Dyes is a Texan and is now getting his head above the average man's shoulder in politics. Hence, it always happens, naturally, somebody arises to knock it down. Krivitsky's death was first officially written as suicide on the books of the Washington police, but the coroner, despite the evidence, withdraws the certificate of suicide and says he's open to further conviction. So far, the G-men have not been requested to take a hand, but the lawyer for the late Russian general wants the G-men brought in to investigate this death with the international angles. The attorney, Louis Waldman, says he's not entirely convinced that Krivitsky committed suicide. He's inclined to the belief that the Russian met death at the hands of the Russian secret police, the OGPU, despite the fact that it has seemed to be almost impossible for anyone to have entered that room bolted as it was from the inside and with no ledge up which or along which anyone could crawl. Krivitsky claimed to be the one outstanding figure in the Russian army who escaped that Stalin purge wherein he claimed 35,000 officers went out, liquidated. Before the Dyes Committee as a witness, he once described the processes which, as he told it, by which the Stalin influence removed the elements of democracy from communism and turned the Soviets into a dictatorship. He also said very blandly at one time that he knew of $1,000,000 counterfeit American bills made in Russia to be used to try to finance communist propaganda in this country. Later in those Dyes Committee hearings, another witness named Duesenberg, as I remember it, claimed he had passed some of this very money. The Secret Service in this country, however, never paid much attention to that testimony. The G-men have not entered this case, however. Krivitsky was dealing not with the G-men, but with the Dyes Committee to some extent. Wendell Willkie is the big attraction at the Foreign Relations Committee hearing on the Capitol Senate side today, but Willkie does not go on the stand until this afternoon. He will be preceded by President Conant of Harvard and Mayor LaGuardia. We hear a rumor that Mr. Willkie may favor some modifications of the Lend-Lease bill, such as limiting the countries to which aid can be given, but actually there's no assurance about that. The House passed that bill to stretch the debt limit of the nation from $49 to $65 billion, with scarcely no more interest than if they were discussing added clerk hire. Today, the House takes up another money bill, a well-worn question of federal relief for the next few months, $375 million for the WPA, which used to get it by the billion. Official Washington believes that relief next year on account of defense expenditures and employment will run quite low. Actually, it may put relief in the category of minor activities. At least, that's official talk. Earl Godwin says goodbye. That's the news from Washington at this time.
This roundup of reports from Germany, England, and Washington is heard at this same hour each weekday morning. This is the National Broadcasting Company.